song, but counting flowers on the wall. Well, I play in solitaire till dawn with a deck of 51, smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now, don't tell me, I got nothing to do. In a sense, it's pretty important to remind us as believers, I was never called to alphabetize the spices in the spice drawer. That's not what I'm about. I'm not called to rearrange the silverware in the silverware drawer, and speaking in a metaphorical sense. I'm called to something bigger than that. I'm called to something that has life and energy and something that matters. In fact, one of the most shocking passages you're going to find here in this book of John, and you're going to find it repeated in different forms, is John 14, verse 12. In John 14, 12, you have this incredible verse that says this. Jesus says, I tell you the truth, anyone who has faith in me will do what I have been doing. Wow. That's who you are. You're the individual who has been living a life that's big, a life that's large, a life that matters, a life that has substance and significance. You're doing the things that Jesus has been doing. Your first response was like mine. What? You're God. I'm not God. What you were doing, Jesus, is God's stuff. And man, you're really up here. And my problem was I used to think I was God, but now I kind of got it straight. You're God and I'm not. And so I'm kind of trivial and I'm down here and you're up here. And boy, we're really, really different. And Jesus, by the way, have you been seeing what you've been doing? I mean, I've been reading this John book and I've been seeing what you've been doing. And what you've been doing is pretty big stuff, pretty significant stuff. You don't literally mean, are you using hyperbole? That's what you're doing. You're using hyperbole because you don't really mean I'll be doing what you've been doing. John 14, verse 12, I only gave you half the verse. You see, the second part of the verse actually takes it further. And he will do even greater things than these. Talk about the one who has faith in me, because I'm going to go to the Father. Here's what Jesus says. I want you to know that here's what the Christian life is. It's not playing solitaire. It's not rearranging the spice drawer. It's not mundane and small. You've been asked to live big and large, and you're going to do even greater things than I do. Wow. Wow. I'm talking to the gathering of people who were scattered to the four winds last week doing the things Jesus has been doing. I'm at the gathering of people who were doing this last week. We've all come together on a Sunday morning. We've come together as an us, a collective group, and we've come with stories of things that we did that were even greater than Jesus was doing. And Jesus says that himself. That's what his followers will do. Don't let anybody sell you on low dreams. Don't let anybody sell you on a small job description. We get to do big things. Now, in case you think John 14 was a little over the top, in John 15, he will say this. He says, you're going to bear my fruit. Now, I'll just brush across the text. You're going to bear my fruit. That's really interesting. It's not just that you're going to bear fruit in the kingdom, but you're going to bear his fruit. He's the vine. You're the branch. It's interesting. The branch never gets any real credit. The branch has no really mind on the fruit. It's always the fruit of the vine. The fruit of the vine. It's the fruit of whatever the thing is. And he says, you're going to bear my fruit. Whatever it is I am, that's what you're going to produce. Whatever I am in my own essence, that's what your life's going to be. When people see you, they're going to go, wow, look, that's the fruit of Jesus there. In case you think that's the only place he mentions it, in particular in John the 17th chapter, in this wonderful prayer that is kept for us, of the prayer between Jesus and the Father just before Jesus goes to the cross. In John 17, Jesus says this in his prayer, as you sent me, and he's praying, Father, as you have sent me into the world, I have sent them in the world. We have the same marching orders. We have the same assignment. We have the same job. The issue of the Christian life is one of living large. So what was Jesus about? What was he doing? What was his passion? If that's his prayer, that we're about the same things that he was about, what is this mission, agenda, or purpose? Well, if you just thumb through it, and what we're doing is we're taking a thread. There are some threads, and by the way, I'm about to tell you everything I know about sewing. You'll want to take this down. You'll want this later. Actually, in a garment, that most threads are just kind of adding texture and color. Most threads. That's the reason you can take a thread in most garments, and you take most threads and you can pop them off and it doesn't do anything. It reduces the texture, reduces the color a little bit. It makes a little bump or something, but it doesn't do any real thing. But there are a few threads. You pull that thread, it's a serge thread. And the serge thread basically, ultimately, is tied to everything else, and everything else is tied to that. And you pull that thread, and the whole sucker falls apart. That's the reason why your mother screams sometimes when you go to a particular hem and you'd pull something out, and just a thread. The trouble is, everything drops. We are going to follow the serge thread of this text. This is the one which everything hangs off of. John 8, John 9, John 10, it has a serge thread in the middle of the meat of this book of John. And here's what this is about. In John 8, what is your agenda? What are you about? And here's his answer. I'm about being light to people in darkness. I'm about calling people out of darkness into the light. That's what I'm doing. John 9, what are you doing? Jesus says, I'm opening the eyes of people. I'm taking away their blindness and I'm giving them their sight. That's what I'm doing. John 10, what are you doing? I'm calling everyone to come to know the shepherd who really cares. I'm replacing their weak and phony shepherds with the shepherd who really cares. I'm keeping them from the wolves. I am protecting people and bringing them into my hand where I can look after them. That's what I'm doing. And you look in this text and you find that Jesus is literally rocking the world and changing their foundation. Their names are the same, those who encounter Jesus and become his disciples, but everything else changes about them. Suddenly you find what occurs is they move from darkness to light. Suddenly you find they move out of blindness to sight. Suddenly they move from this having no shepherd to being the Lord's sheep and knowing his voice and following him. And he gives them life, abundant life, life eternal. Everything changes. Humanity is turned upside down because of this Jesus. And then he says, that's what you're going to do. That's what you get to do. That's the exact same thing you get to do. You get to rescue people out of darkness. That's what you get to do. There are people who have a human body and a human life, but they struggle in darkness their whole life, but you got to escort them out. You get to do that. There are people who will live their entire life and their only security it's some kind of bank account they can hold. It's some kind of lock they put on the door. It's some kind of account they buy for their computer. And you get to help them find a shepherd. And for the first time, they know their Creator's voice, their Redeemer's love. They know of. And you go through this whole text. You get to rescue people out of darkness. You get to rescue people out of blindness. You get to rescue people out of shepherdlessness. That leads to two pretty obvious questions. One is, and many of you have already worked through that a long time ago, I understand that, but you can't walk by it yet, is can Jesus really do that? I mean, that's one obvious question. Can Jesus really do that? Well, he gives a living demonstration in John chapter 9. This living demonstration in John chapter 9, verse 1, and we're not going to go through the whole text. We're going to kind of brush across it a little bit, but John chapter 9, verse 1, and as he went along, he saw a man blind from birth, and he begins to tell this story. And I hope you'll read this story. It's an incredible story. In fact, anybody who says reading the Bible is dull, you haven't read it. I already know that. I mean, you want fist fights? It happens in this text, really. I mean, you want people thrown out and all kinds of stuff occur. Oh, it's in this text. I mean, you're going to find all kinds of pretty exciting things. This is a text that has drama and life to it. A man born blind. Jesus goes up, and I told the story last week. Let me brush across it again. Jesus spits in the dirt. And then does something pretty gross. After he spits in the dirt, he takes his finger in the spit and in the dirt and he wipes it together and he makes a little bit of mud, not a lot, but a little bit of mud. And Jesus takes the mud and then he walks up and he puts it on the guy's eyes. Now, there'd be a lot of reasons why we would look at that and go, well, I don't understand that. That didn't make any sense to me. But I'm going to just remind you, Jesus wanted to make sure they understood something from him, his hand, his life, his place. There are a lot of reasons for that, I think, but it's him. And he puts mud on this guy's eyes. And then he says, I want you to go to the Pool of Siloam and I want you to wash. The guy goes to the Pool of Siloam and washes. Because why? Because he's got mud on his eyes now. I mean, does that make sense? And he goes to the Pool of Siloam and washes. And then you have this powerful verse that says, and he came back seeing. Now his neighbors and those who had seen him begging and those who knew him, John chapter 9, verses 8, 10, and 11, you're going to find these verses. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked then, how then were your eyes opened? He replied, the man they call Jesus, he made some mud and put it on my eyes. And on that phrase, the man they call Jesus, everything changes. You see, up to that point in time, it's just a good, wonderful human interest story. It'll show up in Reader's Digest. It might even make the evening news. It's a wonderful, sweet deal. He could have said a lot of things and it'd been okay. He could have said, God made me well. He could have said, people prayed for me and I got well. He could have said the names of the prophets of the Old Testament. I was thinking about Moses and Abraham and Jacob. And I mean, he could have said all those sort of things. He could have said, I'm a spiritual man and I just believe in spiritual things. He could have said, I think angels did it, but he didn't. He said the one word that is absolutely explosive and has always been explosive. Don't think this is a new thing. He said the one word that became explosive. He said Jesus did this. And when he said Jesus did this, all heck broke loose. Because what happened then was, wait a second. Who does this Jesus think he is? And who do you think this Jesus is? And it turned into a confrontation. Give glory to God. Don't give glory to Jesus. It's okay to talk about God. Anybody will let you talk about God anywhere. And it's even okay if you believe in Jesus. Just don't talk about him. It's okay if you yourself have that. That's fine. But don't be pushing your Jesus on anybody else. So they go get his parents. They say, what's going on? Now, they were already disciplined and throwing people out of fellowship and throwing them out of the synagogues. And I don't know what all that means, but his parents go, we don't know. This is what we do know. He was born blind, and this is our son. And we know he sees now. We don't know. He's of age. Ask him. Because they were afraid of the repercussions that were coming over this name Jesus. They interview the blind man. They interview him twice. What happened? And his answer is, it was Jesus. Jesus did this. They come back and interview him a second time and ask him again, now tell us again how'd that happen. And he says, look, I've told you before, do you want to become his disciple too? And they said, we're disciples of Moses. We follow God. And the blind man, it becomes apparent in this text. If you've read this text at all, you've seen it. It becomes apparent in this text that the blind man sees and that the seeing men are blind. And Jesus stands there. This miracle of the healing of the blind man is like all the other miracles. There's not a single miracle of Jesus that is an end unto itself. Every miracle that Jesus does, including this one, is a window to something bigger. You're asked to come stand at the window of the miracle and look through that window because something bigger is behind it. And Jesus tells you this is the bigger thing behind. This is what this miracle is about. Come stand at this window and I want you to see something. Only this time he tells it to the man who was blind. Look in John chapter 9, verses 35 to 39. Jesus heard they had thrown him out, and when Jesus found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir, the man asked. Tell me so that I may believe in him. And Jesus said, you have now seen him. Through eyes that used to be blind, you've now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. Next slide. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. And then Jesus said this, for judgment I've come into the world so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. What's the issue? Let me rephrase that a little bit. I've come into the world so that those who don't see will see. And I've come into the world so those who think they see can become blind so they have a chance to actually see. The whole issue of who Jesus is driven through this window of this miracle. I am the one who puts context to life. You have a human life, but you walk it in darkness. Let me give light to your life. You're going to find this question about, is Jesus able to really take somebody out of darkness to light? Is he able to take someone out of blindness to sight? Is he able to take someone from shepherdlessness to shepherd? And the answer over and over and over again is yes. In case you missed that story, John will pick it up in John chapter 11 and say, how about a guy who's dead 4 days? Would that be helpful? And he'll take you to the window of a guy who's been dead 4 days and say, stand here and watch what Jesus does when he says a name. A man dead and buried 4 days. When he says a name, life comes. And even the miracle of the raising of Lazarus is standing in front of a window to say this question, can Jesus do this? And in case you missed that one, you go to John chapter 20, which is where we're still coming to. What about a man like yourself? And they will kill Christ, and 3 days later, Christ himself will still raise. Now, the book of John, over and over again, in fact, John 21, John says, I'm just giving you a few of these things. John 21, Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose even the whole world would not have enough room for the books to be written. Jesus' point is, John's point is, I could tell you tons. But here's what he says in John chapter 20. Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life. Can Jesus really do this? John writes and says yes. Now the second question, and the one we're headed to, is this one. Are you serious that I and we get to do that too? That's what we get to do? That's what we do? We get to release people from blindness. We get to help people into the light. We get to rescue those from their disastrous shepherds they have and bring them to the good shepherd. We get to do that? And Jesus says, yes. That's what my disciples will do. In fact, greater things than that. In fact, Peter, he didn't tell him this then, but Peter, you'll stand up and you'll tell this message and 3,000 people at one time will gain their sight. 3,000 will come and say, I want to move out of darkness into light. You guys will get to tell the story of the crucifixion and the resurrection. I can't even tell that story yet. It's still yet to come. You're going to get to tell of the change of what the Holy Spirit does in your life. You're going to have even greater stories to tell because you're going to have the whole story to tell. From the start, this is really important. If you've checked out for any reason, you need to check back in. From the very beginning, Jesus has been very, very clear about what his followers are going to do. In Mark chapter 1, when Jesus first invites these guys who know only a little bit about him, but when he first invites them to be followers of his, he says this, you follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. Now that had to sound a little odd. What do you mean, fishers of men? I mean, I know how to catch fish. I mean, you throw a net and you bring them up and you gut them and you know, you sell them. And I mean, I know how to do that. What do you mean, catch people? What do you mean, catch men? I don't even like the sound of that, really. I mean, honestly, what do you mean, catch men? Can't I just follow you? I don't want to really be this fisher of men kind of person. It must have been both confusing and scary. What do you mean? Perhaps you're like me. When I first began to follow Christ, I didn't follow Christ because I wanted to change somebody else's world. Would you agree? You didn't follow Christ because you wanted to go change somebody else's world. I didn't sign on for that. Think back to when you first began to follow Christ. Maybe you were young. And somebody explained to you that you have a creator and you've been living as if you didn't have a creator, and this creator really has a presence where he is, and we call it heaven, but it's where he is. But if you don't want him, there's hell. And that's where he's not. And so there's hell and there's heaven, and there's a creator who loves you, and there's an evil one who hates you and will destroy you, and there's a creator who wants you, who will redeem you, and you thought to yourself, let's see, heaven, hell, eternity, me, boy. That's a no-brainer. You know, man, I'll sign on to that. That sounds good to me. And I followed Christ because it's a good deal for me. I like this. I don't know why you followed Christ. Maybe you followed Christ because your own world wasn't working so well. Oh, everybody else might have thought it was. They were applauding you and giving promotions and all kinds of stuff. But you knew the hole in your chest. You knew it was a charade. Maybe your world wasn't working well. And you said, I'm tired of the blindness. I'm tired of stubbing my toe. And Christ offers something I'm going to try. And you tried it. And lo, whoa, baby, this is good stuff. I like this. Maybe you were really struggling. You knew you were struggling. Maybe it was your marriage. Maybe it was addictions. And you said, I don't want to live like this anymore. Whatever the reason was, all of those come out to the same point. I'm following Jesus because it's a good deal for me, and I really, really want it for me. I didn't sign on to follow Jesus for you. It was for me. But as soon as I began to pray my normal prayers, I mean, I'm really glad somebody taught me how to pray those prayers to a God who loves me. And so I prayed prayers like, God, bless me, love me, God, love me, bless me, God, bless me, please love me, God, please bless me, God, protect me, would you look after me, God, please. Please, God, have you noticed, could you give that, God? And you know, the crazy thing was, he actually did. And I'm really appreciative of the people who gave me a conversation and a story. I'm really appreciative of people who gave me a CD or a book. I'm really appreciative of the people who told me about Jesus. But I didn't sign on for anybody else. I signed on for me. But in this time of praying these crazy prayers that are pretty shallow about bless me, help me, help me, bless me, help me, please bless me, help me, God, by his Spirit, begins to help me get a clue. And I begin to come and realize, bit by bit by bit, that there's a principle in following Jesus. That principle is unmistakable. This you need to wrap your hands around. The principle of those who really follow Jesus. The principle is those who really follow Jesus, everybody who's in the light now leads others to the light. Everybody who was once blind now becomes a guide. Everybody who becomes Jesus' sheep, now you become a shepherd. And there's no wobble on that. That's why Jesus could say, what I'm doing, you'll do. That's why Jesus could say, the fruit that I bear, you'll bear. That's why Jesus could say, the same way the Father sent me in the world, so I'm sending you. That's why he could say to the disciples, I know you're following me for pretty shallow reasons at the moment. I understand that. Actually, and if you want to go back to it, they're really following Jesus because he just loaded their boat full of fish. Wow. We fished all night and couldn't catch anything, and you just load our boat with fish just by speaking. Wow, look what you did for me. Bless me, bless me, bless me, bless me. Please help me, help me, help me. And Jesus says, yeah, but if you'll follow me, I'm going to make you a fisher of men. I don't know if they believe that. I don't know if they believe that. But that's exactly true. Because the principle of God, let me say it again, everyone now in the light leads others to the light. Everyone once blind now becomes a guide. All of Jesus' sheep now become shepherds. At the very end, when Jesus is going back to the Father in Matthew 28, he will say, I want you to go make disciples out of every circle of life, every ethnic group, out of every nation, out of all peoples. I want you, every circle of people, I want you to make disciples there. I want you to find the ones that are blind and you bring them to sight. I want you to find the ones in darkness and bring them to light. I want you to find the ones that are shepherdless and bring them. I don't know who you are this morning. Maybe you're not a believer and you came with somebody. Maybe you come from a different background where the kind of Christianity that you're kind of familiar with. But you go, whoa, that's exactly what I don't like about you egotistical, self-centered Christians. You are so stinking pushy. You think everybody needs to be just like you. That's what I don't like about you guys. You think you have to proselytize and recruit, and you're always just doing this sense of harassment of people, trying to get them to become like you. Why can't you just let people be alone? Why can't you let people make up their own minds? Why can't you just let people be themselves? You pushy Christians, that's the thing wrong. Maybe you brought a guest this morning who's not a Christian, and you're thinking the only thing worse Randy could have preached on today was money. I mean, that's the only thing worse he could have preached on. I want to make two important observations. The first is this. Christians are not better than anybody else. Christians are not better than anybody else. We're not a higher class of people. We're not brighter. We're not prettier. We're not more handsome. We're not better. Our kids have the same acne that everybody else's has. Our kids have runny nose like everybody else. Our marriages struggle with the same things. Our cars don't start on cold mornings, and we get lost in heavy traffic in big cities too. We're not better. It's not like we're going to the rest of the world and going, hey, we're better, but you could be better too if you became like us. I mean, because, and we, if you're good enough, and you, we, it's none of that nonsense. Truth is, as many other people have stated this before me, we're not better. It's just I have a story to tell you that I'm better off. I'm better off. Where I was and who I was, and I met Christ, and I'm better off. I'm not better. I'm better off. It's not us. It's not about us. It's not about having a higher class people. It's not about me. It's about him. It's always been about him. I am that blind guy, and all I'm trying to do is find some other people who are like me and say, he'll do the same thing for you he did for me. That's all I know. First observation, we're not better. And my apologies to some of you in this room who you've run into such ugly Christians who didn't know what it meant to follow Christ, and they didn't understand, and I am so sorry for that. I am so sorry. See, the truth is, Jesus said, I came so that those who are blind would see and those who think they see would become blind. And I'm sorry, there's some folks that never understood their blindness yet. My, I'm so sorry. Here's the second observation. We have to tell it. We don't have the option. Oh, well, Jesus told us to tell it, so that takes away the option. But the reason I'm saying we have to tell it is this. The Christian message is not intuitive. The Christian message is not intuitive. The Christian message is not something you can just sit around and contemplate. If you just let people be alone, they'll come to the same. No. See, the Christian message is not a philosophy that just bright minds will sort of put it together. The Christian message is not a morality that our culture has it right. If you just had the morality our culture has, and so let's just debate cultures and morality, and it's not that. The Christian message is not even theology, not in the classic sense. The Christian message is not even theology in the sense of let's sit around and analyze the world and figure out who God is, and off what we analyze, we'll present the God we believe that's there. No, it's none of those things. The Christian message is about something that happened and someone who stands there. And if you don't know about this historical event with this historical person who's really there, you can't know. You can't know. You can't intuitively come to know who he is and what he did if somebody didn't tell you. And so it's not like I'm better. It's not like I've got a corner in the market. But I was blind and he brought me to see. And I know that if you'll just come and stand here at this window and look, the same window I stood at, chances are you're going to come to the same conclusion. And when you encounter Christ, man, wouldn't you like to see? Wouldn't you like to see? It is gratitude and compulsion that causes us to tell. You see, the surge thread that goes through all of this It's not a bunch of random stories, just kind of like reaching into the drawer and pulling all the pictures, you know, just random. The thread that pulls it all together is Jesus came, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. There is something. And then Jesus begins to say, can I really do that? And here's what it looks like. And it just plays out over and over again. Can I really do that? And here's what it looks like. Can I really do that? And here's what it looks like. And can I really do that? And here's what it looks like. And that's... And then he turns to this and says, now everybody who follows me will do the same thing I'm doing. You're going to set captives free. Man, I know that sounds scary. Because you know what I'm telling you? I'm telling you that when you get up out of here and say, today I want to be a follower of Christ in all the ways that mean, and I'm going to go live my life following him next week, you're going to be a storyteller next week. You're going to be telling the story of Jesus. You're going to be looking for blind people. Because if you're not, you're not really following Jesus. You're going to be looking for shepherdless people. Because if you're not, you're not really following Jesus. You're going to be looking for people who stand in darkness. Because if you're not, you're not really following Jesus. Wow, that's scary. We're going to pick this up for the next couple of weeks. We're going to talk about this, so we're not done. So if you don't mind, just kind of put a little dash there and we'll kind of pick this up. I do want to remind you really quickly that the people he told that I want you to tell people about me, I want you to deliver people from darkness to light, I want you to be a fisher of men, they were cowards too. I mean, just follow their stories. They were cowards too until they understood some things. And lo and behold, once they understood those things, incredible boldness. In fact, you know the story because of their courage. You'll be that individual for other people. We'll talk about that. You have an assignment. Write it down. You have an assignment. I'm borrowing this assignment from somebody else who also used it, but I really do like it. And so I did it, and I'm going to encourage you to do it. I want you this week to walk up to 10 people and say, I really love you, and God loves you. I'm joking. That's not your assignment. I was making that up. But that's what you think I'm going to say. Here's what I want you to do. I literally want those of you that are believers in Jesus Christ, I want you to sit down and write a letter. It won't take you more than 5 or 10 minutes, but I want you to write a letter. It's a letter you do not have to send. It's a letter that perhaps in many cases you couldn't send because the person you would write it to has already passed away. I have no idea, but I want you to write a letter. I want you to write a letter because I want to remind you what it was like at one time when you yourself didn't have Christ and somebody helped reintroduce him to you. I want you to write a letter to the person who helped lead you to Christ the first time, or maybe you were led to Christ as a child, but you kind of got away, and there was this guy in college, or maybe there was this gal that you worked with, and I don't know who it was, but there was somebody who came in your life and sort of I want you to write a letter to that person. You don't have to send it. You may choose to send it. You're very welcome to do that, but I ask you to do this. Would you recall what it was like to be the blind man and somebody help lead you there? Would you write a letter? The letter that I wrote it about Tuesday this last week. And the letter I wrote was my whole life I had known the story of Jesus. I can't tell of a time that I didn't know it. But I knew it the same way that you know fairy tales and the same way you know other things about dragons. But you were the one who made it become alive in my life, and I realized it had reality, and I began to just write the story out. I know who that is for me. Do you know who it is? Could you pick one and write that? Here's why. I want you to remember with gratitude that once you too were that blind man. And when Jesus says the very things I'm about, you'll be about, I want you to have that base of gratitude when we pick this up next week. On the flap of your bulletin, do you have a flap there close by? In your bulletin, I want you to notice something that you're going to see here for a long time. If you get a bulletin, don't you grab it, steal your neighbor's if you don't mind, do what you need to. I want you to see on that flap of the bulletin, want you to notice it's got prayer needs, and we want you to do that. But I want you to notice down a little bit further that says this, I am praying daily for, and it's got your place if you write a first name. I am praying for them to become a follower of Jesus, and I'm attempting to relationally connect them to this body. I have no doubt that of the prayers of bless me, protect me, God look after me, God give me, give me, give me, I know those even fit within the will of God in lots of ways, but I'm going to guarantee you that prayer is in the middle of the fruit of the life that you've been asked to live. I want to know, do you understand the principle of those who were once blind now become guides? I'm going to ask every week. We're going to collect those. We'll keep track of those. I want to pray by first name. Jay wants to pray. The leaders, the elders, we'll pray. We will pray for the first name. Don't write the last names in. If you do, we'll drop it off because we need to protect the dignity of human beings and people. But you write the first name in, and we will pray with you. And I will be really curious over this next weeks, months. I don't know who will end up sitting in a chair beside you, but somebody who may turn to you one of these days and say, I need to write you a letter. I need to write you a letter because you changed everything about my life. This morning is an invitation to him. If you're ready to follow Christ and you have been presented the gospel by one of your friends here, you grab that friend by the arm and you come on down, or you come down by yourself, but we'd like to talk to you as a leadership. We'd love to pray with you and open up scripture with you. We'd love to take the next step. If you're already a believer, I want you, as you're even singing this song, I want you to think, whose name or names do I write on this? It is not possible to be released from blindness and not become a guide. It's not possible to follow Christ and do that. This morning, would you stand as we sing?